We're going to hear a conversation with the man who was called the moral architect of the Iraq War. He is Kanan Makia, currently a professor of Islamic and Middle Eastern studies at Brandeis University. Back in 2002 and 2003, Makia was an unofficial spokesman for the Iraqi community in exile. He met with members of the Pentagon, State Department, and President George W. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney in the run-up to the war. He also contributed governance plans to the State Department's 2003 Future of Iraq project. Makia's books, Republic of Fear and Cruelty and Silence, deeply influenced administration officials and policy advisors pushing for a U.S. invasion of Iraq. Well, Iraq today is, of course, in chaos. And after the 2003 invasion, Makia didn't put pen to paper as he, in the words of the New York Times, struggled to make sense of his own role in the catastrophe. Well, this spring, he finally published his latest book, a novel. It's called The Rope. We talked about it when Kanan Makia recently visited our studios. I mean, let me start with a little bit more about what the New York Times wrote about in a review of your book, that it represents a decade of introspection for a man whose life's work was closely associated with a costly war. And then they say, the book is also an apology for bestowing legitimacy on a group of men incapable of ruling Iraq. Is that what it is? Is it an apology?
It is an apology not for the war. It is an apology for having played a role in bestowing, conferring some kind of legitimacy upon what was called in the old days the Iraqi opposition, and most of whose members today occupy major seats of power, and they were empowered and put in place by the American war. So in that sense, I deeply regret that. I apologize for it specifically and explicitly, especially in the Arabic edition, where I have a much longer apology.
So who specifically are you apologizing to?
People of Iraq, the Shiite community into which I was born, and all those Iraqis who used to follow my writings and my various and sundry appearances over the years. And that's important because I am not saying, if I may be absolutely clear, that I would do anything other than support a war to overthrow that particular dictatorship, namely the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. To be honest with you, Magna, I wouldn't know how to do anything else. The be-all and end-all of my life was certainly not to promote a war, but it was to write about dictatorship. And I became so convinced of the criminality of that particular regime, I was utterly convinced, and still am today, that its removal by any means necessary, I might add, was a moral thing to do. Think of a Syrian person today whose family are sitting in Aleppo with barrel bombs being dropped on their heads by the regime of Bashar al-Assad, and you will understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, but I mean, speaking of Syria, though, I mean, many analysts would say that the quagmire of Syria is directly related to the catastrophe in Iraq.
I don't agree. The state of Arab affairs, if I might say so, the very fact that Syria fell apart, that Libya is falling apart, that Yemen, one country after another, is falling apart, indicates that what went wrong is not the caused by the 2003
war. Well,
let
me clarify then. The international community's either response or lack of response, depending on your point of view. That's
yes.
What people point to Iraq as being a major influencing factor.
I realize that, but I think that's an immoral and indefensible position when hundreds of thousands of people are being killed in a matter of a very short period of time. So the question is what it is that one is pushing for. The issue of Syria is not just ISIS. The problem is what will replace ISIS. And here we get to the real roots of what went wrong in Iraq. Mm-hmm. That is the failure of the Arab state system, if I might put it that way. We're witnessing a failure that's decades in the making, not just the 12 or 13 years since 2003.
The book has been reviewed, and you yourself say that your novel is an indictment of the Iraqi ruling elite.
Correct.
And its failures after the 2003 war invasion. But I have to ask you, there was ample evidence before the U.S. invasion that such an outcome might come to pass. I mean, I was looking at a 2002 Boston Globe article where you yourself said that you think there's less than a 5% chance that what I'd like to see happens actually happens. But it seems to be an obligation, the invasion, even if it's only a 5% chance to make it happen. And then, you know, I was looking at, for example, George Packer, writer for The New Yorker, who you know very well, who in 2003, just 17 days before the invasion began, said that the closer we get to war, the harder it is to believe that the liberal democracy Kanan Makiya envisions will ever be the outcome. People had misgivings about the capacity of the ruling elite to govern before we even began shock and awe.
They had doubts about its ability to deliver a democracy.
But that was what was being sold to the American people to justify the war.
That's what George Bush sold the American public to, weapons of mass destruction, actually was the main sort of bill of sale. I never bought into that. I never thought weapons of mass destruction, whether he had them or not, was the main issue. The issue for me, the be-all and end-all of my life has been the issue of dictatorship. That dictatorship, and this is an extreme form of dictatorship. It's probably the Arab world's most extreme dictator. That for me was non-negotiable. The dictator had to go. Now, I thought there was a slim chance, and I thought it was the obligation of people like me to make that transition into the 5%, 10% that you mentioned, towards democracy.
Let me ask you, because studying why the aftermath happened in the way that it did is of profound interest. Because, you know, it was what, your 1993 book, Cruelty and Silence? I mean, you were already expressing very reasoned and passionate doubts about the Arab intelligentsia.
True.
But it was you know, a faction of that same intelligentsia that was told to go and take Iraq into an Arab democracy.
But I felt, and I still think it's true, as an activist. Now, I wear two hats. On the one hand, the professional hat, I'm a writer. I do my best to tell the things as I see them. On the other hand, I was an activist for the removal of that particular dictator, Saddam Hussein. And in my activist hat, I know the world and options are full of choices. People, men, and they were, alas, mostly men who came to power in the post-2003, make choices. And they need not have made those choices. They could have made other choices. Now, you may say there's a slim chance that they would make the right choices, as I did, and as you quoted me. But it's still my obligation. I think it's even a moral obligation to press for the successful coming to being of those choices, however slim the chance may be. Think of the American Revolution. What were the chances of defeating the British and establishing the kind of constitution, the kind of republic that the United States became? Slim. But men took the chance. They opted, so to speak, on the basis of what was the least likely thing to happen. And I think that was the right thing to
do. More than 4,500 Americans have died. More than 165,000 Iraqis have been killed since 2003. I mean,
I'm not.
What does the 5% chance mean to the survivors of those killed?
The 5% is what I would work towards, and my chances of it's not the reason for going to war. The overthrow of the dictator, the beginning of a new life. Remember what Iraq was like on the eve of 2003. No hope for the future existed. So the beginning of hope, I gambled on hope. I mean, think of the title of President Obama's book.
The Audacity of Hope.
That's exactly it. I dared to bet on hope, and I would do it again.
You know, in the book, I get the sense that, you know, you question yourself about where you went wrong in your thinking. I wonder if writing this novel, is it Kanan Makiya sort of grappling with, it sounds like maybe not, because you just said that you still dare to hope, but does that genuinely continue to be true?
I have demons inside me like everybody else, I'm sure, and perhaps I am doing that.
Kanan Makiya, there's one last thing I want to ask you. I mean, the reason why you wrote this book and the things you're thinking matters because you did have a front row seat to the decision-making process in the run-up to the Iraq War. you know, you did have connections with the people making the decisions about what would happen after. And so it just got me thinking, Dexter Filkins in 2007 of the New York Times, he wrote this about you. He says, "It seems Makiya's heart, his passion to destroy Hussein, his passion to bring freedom to Iraq, does not want him to go where his intellect would take him." And he describes you as a man of very high intellect. He says, "Where would it go? What would it say? Possibly something like this. You exposed a terrible dictatorship, and for the noblest of motives, you signed on to an invasion that ended in catastrophe. You misjudged your native country and your adopted one, too." Is that what your novel is saying?
I didn't misjudge large numbers of people. I misjudged the leaders who came to power in the immediate post-2003 time. I knew those men. I worked with those men. But in the end of the day, I was not a member of any particular party or organization. I was a writer. And while people may have listened or may have read my pieces, nobody went to war. The United States certainly did not go to war because Kenan Makiya asked it to. So, I mean, one should be, you know, humble as to one's ability to influence such things. The United States is a great big power. It does what it does for its own reasons. I made my voice clear. Dictatorship, the be-all and end-all of my life, the struggle against dictatorship, that was for me important, still is important, not just in Iraq but in Syria, and I still stand by that.
Well, Kenan Makiya, his new book, a novel, is The Rope. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Meghna.